is the system which in its development and its existence, its first feature of any closed system, tries to apply itself to every phenomenon which happens to be appropriated by that system. Yes. Each and every phenomenon will be appropriated and included in that system. More than that, even the absence of one or another phenomenon again will find its place within a given system. The first example of the closed system. So closed system is, as it were, universal, first of all, in its application. Probably the founding father of closed systems you heard of him, the famous German philosopher Georg Friedrich Wilhelm Hegel. Yes. For instance, one of the main postulates in Hegel's philosophy, let us call it A, for instance. I underline it in such a way. States that there is an absolute idea or an absolute spirit which finds its realization in the thinking and in the consciousness of humankind. Yes. And from this follows that it is at the same time the highest principle of reason, and the whole history was interpreted by Hegel as what? The development of that realization of the highest spirit in various of that main general principle in various individual cases, whose behavior and way of action was judged only from the point of view of its correspondence or non-correspondence to that principle. You understand that, yes? From where we have that, as I call Hegel's slogan, yes? All that really is what?
Rational.
Is okay. Probably in modern language is rational. And then all that is rational is really existing, yes? So you cannot win. Try to be against it. So if you said, no, professor, he was a professor. Yeah, no, professor, in my opinion, all this is humbug. And he would answer what? Because you did not yet achieve that level of rationality to understand the principle, yes? He would recur to a sort of individual example. You, for instance. Yes. You think that my principle is unreasonable because you have not yet reached that stage in the development of your own self-realization which would allow you, yes, to understand. So you cannot be right while trying to, shall we say, what? to quarrel with such a system. For instance, his very true pupil and follower, Karl Marx, he is one of the most important systems, is that way of thinking is always what? The class way of thinking. And if you agree with Marx, the Marxist teacher or a Marxist teacher would say, oh, your class consciousness is reached such a degree that you understand Marxism. If you disagree, he would say, it is because your class consciousness is a consciousness of a reactionary character because you belong to the ruling classes. Yes. Again, it is very interesting that you cannot be right. Yes. If you are against, you cannot be right. It is impossible. You can't win. But the most clear example of the closed system is, of course, can you give me the third example? Much better than the first. Classical Freudian psychoanalysis. Oh, you do not believe in my theory, Freud. It is because you are neurotic yourself. So, and then if somebody believes in his theory, say, well, it means that your neurosis has already become neutralized by some other factors. And first of all, but what? You're having been subject to successful psychoanalysis. It's an absolute analogy to Marxism. In a way, Freud was more Marxist than Marx himself. So it is goes without saying, whether you are for or against, it will be immediately interpreted in terms of the system. You are for or against. But there is one other feature of the closed system, even in my opinion, more important than the first, that the universal application and appropriation. The second will be the principle of one entry, you know, which means that, well, among those elements or postulates in a closed system, for instance, A, I underlined twice, which means that only through this postulate. So in Marxism, what is A? The history of humankind is the history of class struggle, yes. And when some unlucky chaps in his lifetime try to say, but what about the time when there were no classes? And then Marx invariably replied, what? It was before the beginning of history. And of course, well, the worst trouble that Marx experienced in his life, theoretical trouble, I'm not speaking about his numerous personal and family troubles. Yes. When he started reading about ancient Indian history. Sure of interests, as Marx recorded in one of his famous letters to Weidemeyer. And by the way, in the heads of those ancient Indians, wrote Marx, there's a confusion. They could not think theoretically, Marx remarked in his famous letter to Weidemeyer. So simply they, of course there was class struggle, but they could not be aware of it because of the feebleness of their theoretical thinking. And splendid addition, which is never quoted by Marxists. There is only one nation in the world who can do that, which? Germans! Can you imagine Marx? He said only a German genius could achieve it. And then never, not a single Marxist in the 20th century was honest enough to quote it. Because all other nations and in the first place, Slavs, yes, Russians, Croatians, Serbs, they have no intellectual power for self-realization of themselves as subject to class struggle. Yes, isn't it funny? Yes. Again, it's an example of a closed system. But you cannot, yes?
What was the principle of one entry?
Sorry?
The principle of one entry. You were giving examples of
Yes, one entry in Marxism class struggle.
Oh, so
one entry in psychoanalysis.
So it's
neurosis.
Like the most important factor.
Yes, as the most important factor in comparison to which all other factors are, as it were, subservient, secondary to it. Yes, it is about now. And of course, in Freud, if you do not understand my system, it means that you have not yet been cured from your neurosis. Yes, it is quite understandable. Poor chap, you need a sort of repeated session of psychoanalysis. And after that, you will probably come to your senses again. You understand? And Max, it is class consciousness. Yes, your class consciousness is not developed enough to understand the theory and history of class struggle. Poor Indians, they got offended, yes. They got offended when they first read some Marxian excursus into Indian history, yes. Well, of course. What can we do? And that is what Marx called what? Objective factor. The fact that you do not understand the class struggle as a kind of motor of history, yes. That very fact means that you do not realize your own what? Class consciousness. It's the circular argumentation, very typical for Hegel, Marx, and Freud. I remember as he quarreled once, he quarreled with one Russian genius, yes? Russians, you know, they're very disorderly people, while Marx's attitude was purely Germanic. It was purely Germanic dichotomy. Yes. and there was one chap, by the way, a great scientist. Probably you heard that name, Maxim Kovalevsky. Yes. Who developed his own theory of a primitive prehistorical society, yes. And so Marx said, and he was very anti-Marxist, Marx said, my friend, simply you cannot value the heights of German genius. And that is why, again, it's a totally different epistemological argumentation. It is an extremely interesting fact. Now, let us go further. If we imagine the Buddhist, for instance, the Buddhist philosophy as a system, what is very interesting? It is a system which has not one entry, but very many entries. For instance, the whole picture of the universe, as we see it, the whole picture of the universe, as we see it, in Buddhism, that picture has very many entries. For instance, one of the main postulations of Buddhist philosophy is what? For instance, everything is impermanent. By the way, it coincides with one of the main postulations of Marxism, by the way, of Marxist so-called dialectics. Everything is impermanent. So you may start understanding, Buddhism through, for instance, the element B. Yes, through the element B. Yes, but there is one other postulation in Buddhism, which is that there is such a state where what? There is no impermanence. That is no sorrow, no impermanence. It is a totally different postulation. And what is very interesting, here impermanence in Buddhism would not be, it is a very interesting point, would not be sheer negation of permanence, but impermanence will stand as what? Absolutely independent notion. It is extremely important as speaking of Buddhism. So, we may regard the whole system of Buddhism from the point of view of permanence and impermanence, but we may choose and quite another point of view, and thereby another empty. You understand that? Totally different. Not at all in opposition to the first, but what coexisting with the first. That is what Marxism could never deal with. Yes. Marx would have said what? What kind of humbug? Or he would have called it methodological humbug. The things are divided into permanent and impermanent, and then what is permanent is permanent, and what is impermanent. From the Buddhist point of view, at each and every step of philosophizing, we have what? Combination of factors. And you cannot say that the factor number one, yes, generates factor number two, factor number, as in Marxism, or Hegelianism. Factor number two generates factor number three, etc., etc. So, it is indeed very interesting that yes, impermanence and what? Suffering in Buddhism, yes. But neither impermanence nor suffering, well, has an absolute metaphysical value in Buddhism. Not at all. Because there are conditions in which, according to the Buddhist philosophy, it would be very difficult or even impossible to establish such oppositions as permanence or impermanence. So, while speaking of Marxism or Hegelianism, in fact we have only one entry and one way out of the system, while in Buddhism there might be a lot of entries, and a lot of ways out of the system. Or in the words of Sir Karl Popper, if we compare Buddhism with Marxism, we will learn that Marxism is like Hegelianism, absolutely closed system. That is all, like psychoanalysis, like Freud's psychoanalysis. That is, all things outside that system can find its interpretation only within that system. They never can have their own interpretation. Such was Hegelianism, such was Marxism. Yes, that is why Sir Karl Popper called them what, closed systems. You cannot get outside that system. That everything, whatever happens, will be interpreted, well, within that system. That is why Popper invented the term closed system. A closed system, it is indeed very interesting phenomenon. So, again, speaking about Buddhism. Well, okay. That, yes?
So, can we say that Buddhism is an open system?
In comparison to Marxism, in Hegelianism, absolutely, absolutely. Marxism is an example of open system. And what is very interesting, ladies and gentlemen, that in his hostility to Marxism and complete denial of Marxism, Sir Karl Popper developed his own, what, closed system. Because if you argue with closed system, your lot is very often what, that you are creating your own closed system. Yes, and it is indeed very interesting. While in Buddhism, the entry into that circle, that each of the elements can become an entry within that circle. In other words, it is not closed system. I do not want to disappoint you, ladies and gentlemen, but most of the philosophical systems in the world are unfortunately closed. How much time left? Sorry.
10 minutes.
10 minutes, yes. And we may regard Buddhism, with all possible reservations, as a kind of open system. And isn't it interesting, ladies and gentlemen, that most of the enemies of Marxism were also the enemies of Buddhism, because they were against Marxism, trying to form their own closed systems like Marxism. That's their only point of reference was a closed system. And it's a very interesting historical, philosophical phenomenon. And but probably the most interesting thing in that phenomenon of Buddhism as an open system. Open system is a system which have more than one entry in it. You understand that? For instance, what is one of the main points in Buddhist philosophy? The law of what? Independent origination. Yes, you have read about that. Yes, but that law in Buddhism is not absolute, because it is written in the Buddhist text. When one is aware of the law of interdependent origination, then one is not any longer subject to that law. Yes, and that law does not apply to him. In very many other cases, it is more or less like that. So we may say that Hegelianism and Marxism and psychoanalysis are clearest examples of the closed system, where each and every new element under interpretation can be interpreted only unambiguous within the framework of that system, which has only one entry. That is, in In Hegel, it is the absolute spirit and its manifestations and self-realizations. In Marxism, it is a postulate of what? A class struggle. So if you do not believe in class struggle, it simply means that you belong to a reactionary class. If you believe in class struggle, it means that you have already outgrown the ideology of the ruling class. It is very simple, and it is one of the great powers and strengths of Marxism. It's, I would have said, it is a limit of simplicity. Everything is going without saying, yes. Everything is crystal clear. So, and that is why the famous motto by old Karl Marx, yes, when a great Russian sociologist, Maxim Kovalevsky, dared, yes, so many few people dared to contradict Marx, dared to say, but listen, my facts contradict your theory. Marx said, the worse for your facts. My teaching is above facts, because my teaching creates facts. It is itself the most powerful factor. It is a trick, by the way. I cannot say that Marx was the only man in history who he did not invent that trick. It was invented. Anyway, now, for the last time, we are returning to Buddhist philosophy. So, in order to discuss any concrete phenomenon from the point of view of Buddhist philosophy, you may enter it by quite a few different entries. For instance, you may enter it through the entrance of suffering, yes? The first truth of suffering. You may enter it through the entry or entrance, and not at all of suffering, but of nirvana, as the place in double quotes, where there is no suffering. And you also may enter it through the law of interdependent origination. By the way, for the sake of your philosophical development, there is one very important philosophical point in Buddhism, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, how many minutes left?
Three.
Well, in more than enough time. We have eternity before us. Yes, you agree with that, sir? Yes. We have too much time, yes. But that principle is particularly interesting, that it is in Buddhism a person who is aware of something, yes, is thereby what, as it were, automatically what?
Freed from it.
Automatically freed from it. And by the way, it is very similar, even Hegel could not deny it, to Hegelian teaching. Only in Hegel's philosophy that idea is absolute, while in Buddhism it is subject to quite a few qualifications. So, for instance, such a kind of inexorable law of interdependent origination, well, one other entry within that circle of Buddhist postulations, even that law is not regarded as absolute. Because what? Those who know, who cognized the law of interdependent origination, are not any longer subject. It is indeed great value of the idea of knowledge in Buddhism. Ladies and gentlemen, now I would appeal to you to read one other very little piece from Conze's book on Buddhist thought. And in the quick, please do distribute it among your colleagues, please. Oh, absolutely. Please, do not ignore me. And read it, and if possible, learn it by heart. Let me, by the way, remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that I am available, as always, tomorrow, 11 to 1. But don't come, please, at 1 minute to 1. It is back to me? Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Andrea.
You need those two stacks as well, sir?
Sorry, what?
Are you intending on passing out those papers as well?
What?
Do we need those?
No, please, no, of course not. It is my book, and I will never recommend you to read it, because otherwise I will have some serious trouble with psychiatrical service at Grinnell, if there is such a service in Grinnell, so please don't tempt me. Thank you very much for your attention. See you the day after tomorrow.
I was going to stop by your office tomorrow.
Yes, of course, tomorrow, as usual. Oh, you are marvelous indeed.
Are we supposed to turn this off?
Let's try it.